Hello, this is Lori, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the Thursday, November 13th issue of the Canandaigua Daily Messenger on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Veterans Celebration. Eugene Girard, a 103-year-old World War II veteran from Canandaigua and a post member, led a crowd in the Pledge of Allegiance. The ceremony was led by new Post 256 Commander Matt Parsons. Post 256 will host a dinner for veterans on 6 p.m. November 15th. All veterans and guests are welcome for a free dinner. The cost for civilians is $10 per meal. The American Legion is on 454 North Main Street in Canandaigua. RSVP to Post 256 at ALNY256.com. New York secures settlement for data breach impacting 1.7 million students. New York has reached a $1.7 million settlement with an educational technology company following a data breach that exposed the personal information of millions of students statewide, state officials said. Illuminate Education Incorporated, a company that provides software for grades to track attendance and grades, failed to adequately safeguard student data, resulting in the exposure of personal information belonging to 1.7 million New York students in 2021, according to the Office of Attorney General Letitia James. The compromised information included student names, birth dates, and demographic information. The California-based company offers tools that monitor academic, behavioral, and mental health developments for millions of students, including those in about 750 schools across New York. The breach also affected students in Connecticut and California. The attorneys general in impacted states have jointly secured a total of $5.1 million in settlements. Students, parents, and teachers should be able to trust that their school's online platforms are safe and secure, James said in a statement. Illuminate violated that trust and did not take basic steps to protect students' data. Today's settlements will ensure that Illuminate protects students' data in classrooms across the country. The New York students' personal information was exposed in 2021 after hackers accessed the company's system using the credentials of a former Illuminate Education employee and downloaded unencrypted database files, James said. An investigation by the State Office of the Attorney General and the Education Department found the company failed to implement basic security measures, including monitoring suspicious activity, encrypting data, deactivating inactive user accounts, and limiting data access, James said. Under the settlement, Illuminate Education is required to adopt stronger cybersecurity measures, including policies and procedures that limit access to students' data, encrypt student data, and establish a system to monitor anomalous activity. Founded in 2009, Illuminate Education aims to provide educators with holistic data to visualize student progress. The company serves 17 million students, 5,200 districts and schools in the U.S., according to the website. New York Highway renamed for fallen airman Corey Wade. A crowd gathered on Route 21 in front of the family home of the late U.S. Air Force tech, Sergeant Corey Wade, on November 11th to witness the unveiling of the sign dedicating that portion of the New York Highway in his honor. Wade, a 2008 Red Jacket High School graduate who served honorably as a medical logistics airman with the 48th Rescue Squadron of the U.S. Air Force, was killed during a training exercise in June of 2023. Assemblyman Jeff Gallahan, Republican Manchester, Ontario County, who championed the bill to rename this portion of Route 21 in Wade's honor, stood in front of the sign with Wade's parents and State Senator Pam Helming, R. Canandaigua. Today, being the 11th, is kind of a special day because Corey was born on the 11th. This legislation was signed in Albany on the 11th, and we are presenting it today on the 11th, Gallahan said. The portion of Route 21, which has been renamed Highway Dedicated to Sergeant Corey Wade, goes from the intersection of State Route 96 to Latting Road, Standpipe Road, and passes directly in front of the Wade family home, where the unveiled sign is now located. Wade's parents, Mike Wade and Jill Sauer Betts, got emotional as Helming spoke of the service and sacrifice that she said defined Wade's life. Helming spoke of a similar bill she sponsored that dedicated a portion of the other end of Route 21 in Canandaigua to local Korean War veteran Ralph Calabrese, who died in 2021. When I think of Corey and I think of Ralph, I can't see anything more fitting than both ends of this road are dedicated to these tremendous heroes, she said. I like to think that Ralph was waiting for Corey, and now I can't imagine what the two of them are up to. Who was Tech Sergeant Corey Wade of Manchester? He immediately enlisted in the Air Force after graduation in 2008, Gallahan said. His exemplary service earned him numerous awards and decorations, including the Air and Space Commendation Medal, Air and Space Achievement Medal, Joint Meritorious Unit Award, Air and Space Outstanding Unit Award, National Defense Service Medal Ribbon, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and the U.S. Air Force Non-Commissioned Officer Professional Military Education Graduate Ribbon. Mike Wade spoke through his tears about his son's humbleness at the unveiling ceremony on Veterans Day. He said he wasn't even aware of some of his son's awards and honors until after his passing. He didn't think he was any different than anyone else, his father said. It never gets easier, but now his name will be in front of his bedroom. Wade is known for his love of the outdoors, boating, riding motorcycles, skiing, and enjoying time with family and friends. He shared a close bond with his beloved dog, Kaiser, his family stated after the bill to rename the highway was passed. Members of the U.S. Air Force Honor Guard and the Shortsville American Legion helped unveil the signage dedicating the highway to Wade. Death of Williamson woman ruled a homicide. Identity released. The death of a 66-year-old woman found inside a Williamson, Wayne County home last week has been ruled a homicide, according to the Monroe County Medical Examiner's Office. The state police identified the victim as Cheryl L. Goodberle of Arrow Bend Drive. Troopers responded to her residence around 4:30 p.m. November 5th for a welfare check and discovered Goodberle deceased inside the home with signs of trauma. The New York State Police Bureau of Criminal Investigation, along with the Troop E Major Crimes and Forensic Investigation Units, are continuing to investigate the circumstances surrounding her death. Investigators are asking anyone with information who may have seen unusual activity in the area to contact the state police at 585-398-4100 or email crimetip@troopers.newyork.gov. Tips may be kept confidential. The investigation remains ongoing. Powerball ticket worth $50,000 sold in Ontario County. Check your numbers. A gas station in Ontario County sold a Powerball ticket worth $50,000, according to the New York Lottery. The third prize winning ticket was sold at the Speedway at 162 Lakeshore Road in Canandaigua, lottery officials said. The ticket was sold for the November 8th Powerball drawing. No one won the jackpot prize over the weekend, which on that date had reached $473.9 million, according to lottery officials. The ticket sold in Canandaigua was one of four third-place winning tickets sold in New York for the November 8th Powerball drawing. The other three tickets were sold in New York City or Long Island, in Brooklyn, Huntington Station, and Ronkonkoma, lottery officials said. Each ticket was valued at $50,000. Powerball winning numbers for November 8th, 2025. White balls, 3, 53, 60, 62, and 68. Walmart announces Black Friday 2025 deals. How to get early access. There's still over 2 weeks until Thanksgiving and Black Friday, but retailers like Walmart and Target are getting a head start. Walmart announced it will offer early Black Friday deals both online and in the store that will continue through Cyber Monday, and Target is gearing up for a six-day sale later this month. Here's what to expect. Walmart has three different waves of Black Friday deals beginning the week of November 14th. According to Walmart's website, it operates 111 retail units in New York. Here is a closer look at what it is offering. Event number one, November 14th through the 16th. The first event runs November 14th through the 16th, but Walmart Plus members get 5 hours early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on November 13th. All deals will be available online and in stores for the entire event. Here are some examples of the sales being offered in Walmart's first Black Friday event of 2025. A 98-inch TCL QLED 4K Google TV was $1,798. The event price is $998. A Barbie Malibu travel playset was $21.88. Event price $12. A Circuit Explore 3 bundle was $410. The event price is $197.99. A Dyson V12 Detect Slim Cordless Vacuum Cleaner was $729. The event price is $399.99. A Ford 24V Ride-On was $599.99. The event price is $299.99. Goodyear Reliant All-Season Tire entire line event offer $30 off per tire. A Govee 65-inch LED lights was $99. Event price $69.99. Lange Hairstyler was $119. The event price is $48.30. Men's and women's Levi's signature denim was $24.98, event price $15. My Texas House Glitter Trees, a set of three, was $159.66. The event price is $78. The second event runs online only November 25th through the 27th. 7th then online, and in stores from November 28th through the 30th. Walmart Plus members get 5 hours early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, November 24th. Event number three is Cyber Monday, December 1st. The third event, which takes place on Cyber Monday, is online only, and Walmart Plus members get 5 hours early access online beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, November 30th. Walmart Plus is a paid membership offering early access to deals, free shipping, and more. You can sign up at walmart.com for a free 30-day trial to try Walmart Plus out. An annual Walmart Plus plan is $98, $8.17 per month after your free 30-day trial. While Target's early Black Friday sale ended November 8th, shoppers can still get discounts of up to 50% online throughout the month of November. The major retail's official Black Friday and Cyber Monday sale starts online November 27th and runs through December 2nd, but sale specifics have yet to be revealed. Target's membership program, Target Circle, is free to join, and you can sign up online at target.com or via the Target app. You'll need to sign up for the membership program to unlock early access to Target's Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Canandaigua Daily Messenger on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Levi's to sell $300 jeans at more sites. Levi's will sell its new line of $300 jeans in more stores next year as it looks to boost growth by tapping into strong demand for premium denim, Chief Financial and Growth Officer Harmit Singh told Reuters. Launched in Asia earlier this year and in around 24 stores in Europe and the United States since September, the Blue Tab range of higher quality jeans and shirts is part of an ongoing push to broaden the Levi's brand and attract more women. "We're coming back with a larger scale in 26 because it's done really well," said Singh, dressed in a shirt and jacket from the new line inspired by heavier and stiffer Japanese selvedge denim. In Europe, Blue Tab jeans sell for between about $290 and $410, compared with between $80 and $150 for its Red Tab line. Blue Tab jackets sell for around $810. Levi's, which currently sells mostly mid-market denim under its Red Tab range, as well as mass market range for outlet stores and Walmart, faces a delicate balance to cater to both budget and premium markets. While premium denim accounts for about 10% of the roughly $100 billion global denim market, it is growing faster than the mid-single digits of the regular jeans category, Singh said. Selvedge denim is woven on traditional looms that produce self-finished edges and a tightly woven, denser fabric. Design is also key, with a stronger pipeline planned for next year across men's and women's ranges, he said. The maker of 501s, which reported sales of $6.4 billion last year, had set a target of reaching $10 billion in revenues and a 15% operating earnings margin by 2027, but scrapped the timeline during the pandemic as high inflation slowed growth. President Donald Trump's trade tariffs have added further headwinds for the company, but after high single-digit percentage revenue growth in recent quarters, Singh said the company may be ready to outline a new timeline next year. Levi's is expecting a strong holiday season, Singh said, with the company currently selling more full-price product this year compared with a year ago. "The consumer has largely been resilient, and we're not seeing any demand contraction, he said, adding that Levi's would limit discounts as much as possible. Expanding into non-denim fabrics that attract new customers and collaborations with brands like Barbour and Nike is helping to sell at full prices, Singh said, while a lower cotton commodity price this year has helped keep down costs. Later on, Levi's could buy a new brand to drive faster growth, Singh said, adding to its $150 million Beyond Yoga business acquired in 2021. "Right now, we have two brands. We have left the door open for another brand." Honda cuts outlook amid tariffs and chip shortages. Honda's downgrade to its full-year profit outlook underscores the immediate pressure from U.S. tariffs and global chip shortages. But the deeper, longer-term challenges lies in intensifying competition from Chinese electric vehicle makers. Japan's second-largest automaker cut its full-year outlook by a fifth after the market closed on November 7th, citing one-off EV costs and a shortage of components using chips from Netherlands-based Nexperia. The Dutch government took control of the company owned by China's Wingtech on September 30th. It also estimated a $2.6 billion hit from U.S. tariffs, although that was less than the $2.92 billion originally flagged. Yet the most pressing concern for Honda, and by extension other Japanese carmakers, is the steady erosion of market share in Southeast Asia, a region where they once dominated virtually unchallenged. Until recently, Japanese automakers believed they could shield their Asia business outside of China from the kind of slump they were experiencing in the world's largest car market. The assumption no longer holds. In markets like Thailand, the competitive landscape is quite intense, and overall we have lost our competitive edge in terms of pricing, Honda Executive Vice President Noriya Kahara said at a briefing on November 7th. The challenge goes beyond declining sales. Automakers are responding by ramping up incentives and cutting prices to attract buyers, Kahara said. That means leaner profits on new sales. Honda now expects to sell 925,000 vehicles in Asia, including China, in the current financial year, a decline of more than 10% from its previous target of 1.09 million cars. It had previously forecast to sell 5,000 fewer cars in Asia outside of China than it did last year. That figure has now ballooned to 75,000 fewer. Competition from Chinese EV makers such as BYD is becoming increasingly difficult for Japan's automakers across Southeast Asia, including in Thailand and Indonesia, said one industry source who declined to be identified so he could speak openly. Southeast Asia is starting to be significantly impacted by Chinese players, said the source, speaking before Honda reported its results. The growth of Chinese EVs in Thailand over the past 2 years has been extraordinary. The advance by BYD and others comes as China's own auto industry faces a brutal price war at home, prompting its EV makers to expand aggressively overseas. Honda's retail sales plunged nearly 30% in Indonesia over the first 9 months, compared with the same period last year, according to company data. In Malaysia, they fell 18%, and in Thailand, they were down 12% over the period. The company has no new models planned for the region from this fiscal year into the next, apart from an overhaul of the City Compact sedan, a delay that could risk ceding more ground to Chinese manufacturers. Japanese automakers are now turning to India, a market that remains all but closed to Chinese EV makers. Honda said in October it will make the world's third largest auto market a production and export base for one of its planned electric cars, a sign of the country's growing importance as a manufacturing hub for the company. Toyota and Suzuki have separately announced investments totaling $11 billion to beef up manufacturing and export capabilities. But experts say Honda faces a deeper structural challenge. Its automotive division reported an operating loss for the third straight quarter on November 7th, lagging behind the performance of its motorcycle division. Yoshio Tsukada, founder of Tsukuda Mobility Research Institute, called the profitability gap between the businesses unbalanced. If Honda were to split its four-wheel and two-wheel businesses, the motorcycle side could thrive globally, he said, adding that the automotive business remains in a dire situation under the current structure. Overall, Honda lowered its forecast for this fiscal year's vehicle sales to 3.34 million, down from 3.62 million expected previously. That includes a 110,000 unit reduction attributed to decreased production caused by a chip supply shortage from Nexperia. The United States remains Honda's top market by volume, accounting for 42% of global sales, up 4% year on year. But even apart from U.S. tariffs, Honda faces headwinds in North America. The chip shortage forced a factory shutdown in Mexico and production adjustments in the United States and Canada, contributing to a $994.83 million hit to Honda's operating profit outlook. Honda and Nissan had been exploring a merger until talks collapsed in February. Tuscada said the weak positions of Honda, Nissan, and Mitsubishi Motors, which might otherwise benefit from economies of scale, make a revival of these discussions unlikely. A merger of Honda with Nissan or Mitsubishi would currently be an alliance of the weak, he said. Texas flood victims' families sue summer camp owners. Family of those who perished in raging floodwaters at an all-girls camp in Texas this summer are suing the camp and its owners and operators, accusing them of negligence and reckless disregard. At least 27 campers and counselors at Camp Mystic along the Guadalupe River in the hill country of central Texas died as flash floods swept through the area in the early morning hours of July 4th. As the floodwaters rose, the suit alleges camp leaders instructed groundskeepers to spend more than an hour relocating camp equipment instead of people from the site. These young girls died because a for-profit camp put profit over safety, it said, naming the camp and members of the Eastland family, the site's long-standing owners, among the defendants. The 32-page suit, filed in state court in Austin, accuses Camp Mystic of placing campers in cabins located in flood-prone areas and failing to develop necessary evacuation plans. The camp chose to take no steps to protect its campers and counselors while it knew a storm and life-threatening flash flooding were approaching, it said. Finally, when it was too late, the camp made a hopeless rescue effort from its self-created disaster in which 25 campers, two counselors, and the camp director died. The plaintiffs are asking for damages of at least $1 million. In response to a request for comment on the lawsuit, Camp Mystic issued a one-sentence statement. "We continue to pray for the grieving families and ask for God's healing and comfort," it said. Jeff Ray, the camp's legal counsel, said the defendants disagree with several accusations and misinformation in the suit regarding the actions of Camp Mystic and Dick Eastland, who lost his life as well. "We empathize with the families of the campers and counselors and all families in the Hill Country who lost loved ones in the horrific and unprecedented flood of July 4th," Ray said. "We intend to demonstrate and prove that this sudden surge of floodwaters far exceeded any previous flood in the area by several magnitudes, that it was unexpected, and that no adequate warning system existed in the area." The suit said, "While youth camps provide the chance to form lifelong bonds and enjoy nature, this ideal exists only when youth camp operators take reasonable and required precautions to ensure the safety of children and counselors invited to their camps. When they fail to do so, tragedy is sure to follow." It also charges the camp's owners with deepening the family's pain with their actions since the tragedy, including their recent declaration of plans to reopen for business even as one victim of the disaster remains missing. "The camp has caused further trauma to these distraught families," it said, "and through it all, the camp refuses to accept any responsibility for its actions and failures to act, defiantly blaming this tragedy on an act of God that no responsible steps could have avoided." You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Canandaigua Daily Messenger on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Study shows Trump checks would cost $600 billion. President Donald Trump's proposal to send Americans $2,000 rebate checks from money collected through his tariffs is projected to cost $6 billion a year, about double what the United States is expected to generate from the new import duties. The Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, a nonpartisan nonprofit that studies fiscal policy, released the projections on November 10th after Trump, over the weekend, pitched his rebate idea on social media. The president touted taking in trillions of dollars and said a dividend of at least $2,000 a person, not including high-income people, will be paid to everyone. Trump then brought up his idea during November 10th remarks to reporters in the Oval Office. We're going to issue a dividend to our middle-income people and lower-income people, about $2,000, he said, and we'll use the remaining tariffs to lower our debt. We're going to be lowering our debt, which is a national security thing. While Trump did not specify income requirements for recipients, the center's analysis assumes the checks would be designed similarly to the stimulus payments distributed directly to Americans during the COVID-19 pandemic. The checks from the 2022 CARES Act in Trump's first term included payments for adults and additional money per child for individual taxpayers earning up to $75,000 or $150,000 for joint income tax filers. Under the same criteria, a single round of Trump's tariff dividend checks would cost about $6 billion. However, the new tariffs imposed in 2025 are projected to generate only about $3 billion a year. As of the end of October, Trump's new tariffs had generated an additional $100 billion in tax revenue. Over a 10-year period, the dividends would increase deficits by $6 trillion if rebate checks were distributed annually, according to the CRFB's analysis. The president's pitch came as the Supreme Court is considering whether to rule against his use of emergency powers as legal justification to issue sweeping tariffs on imports from across the world. At November 5th oral arguments in a legal challenge brought by businesses, all three of the court's liberal justices expressed clear resistance to upholding Trump's power to impose emergency tariffs. And at least three of the court's six conservative members, Chief Justice John Roberts and Justices Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, sounded skeptical of the Trump administration's arguments. Nevertheless, Trump expressed optimism about the fate of his tariffs. Nobody thinks it's going to be reversed. I think we had a very good court case, he said on November 10th. If the court rules Trump's tariffs are illegal, the administration could be required to return the revenue it collected, which would spoil any hopes that the dividend checks might come to fruition. Any proposal for rebate checks from tariff revenue would require approval from Congress, which would hold purse powers when it comes to spending public dollars. Transgender troops sue Air Force over pensions. A group of transgender service members who served up to 18 years in the U.S. Air Force are suing the military for depriving them of their retirement benefits after the Trump administration booted all transgender troops from the military ranks. In a lawsuit filed on November 10th, more than a dozen transgender service members are asking a court to reinstate the pensions they say the Air Force promised them as they were forced out of the military, only to rip them away in the subsequent months. President Donald Trump issued an executive order earlier this year ordering the Pentagon to oust all transgender troops. Transgender soldiers who resigned of their own accord would receive voluntary separation pay, according to Pentagon guidance. Those who did not could be identified via medical record reviews and expelled. Amid the purge of veterans, the Air Force told transgender troops in May that those being expelled after 15 to 18 years of service could apply for early retirement benefits. All the plaintiffs received their official retirement orders the following month. And then on August 4th, the Air Force changed its mind. After careful consideration, I am disapproving of all of those airmen's applications for retirement benefits, wrote Brian Scarlett, the Acting Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, in a memo. The military, the Air Force, is seeing my service as meaningless, said Logan Ireland, 37, the lead plaintiff. Ireland, who served for 15 years, told USA Today that he had lined up his finances and started applying to other jobs when his retirement was suddenly rescinded. While his command team has been supportive, officials have not responded to his request to speak to higher-ups in the military, he said. I want to know why, he said. Why is my retirement being taken away from me? The Air Force has said the group of people who lost benefits had an opportunity to apply for voluntary separation pay. The Air Force said it does not comment on ongoing litigation. Shannon Minter, the legal director for the National Center for LGBTQ Rights, and an attorney representing the group, said some plaintiffs could stand to lose millions of dollars. They and their families will also lose military health care, Minter added. Minter said the military only rescinds retirement pay in extremely rare circumstances. He pointed to an Air Force policy that lists fraud, manifest error, mathematical error, mistakes of law, or substantial new evidence as the only acceptable rationales for revoking pensions. Ordinarily, when the military, in this case the Air Force, issues retirement orders, those are sacrosanct, said Minter. It is unheard of for such an order to be rescinded, much less with no explanation and no justification. The Supreme Court sided with the Trump administration in allowing the ban on transgender people serving in the military to take effect in May. Pedestrian struck and killed by Amtrak train in Wayne County. A pedestrian was killed when struck by an Amtrak passenger train in Wayne County on November 10th, according to the Wayne County Sheriff's Office. Deputies said that the pedestrian was hit by an oncoming train just east of the overpass near Franklin Street in Lyons around 4:45 p.m. The fatal incident occurred on the south track, and the train, which carried 141 passengers, was traveling at 79 miles per hour at the time. Amtrak operators told authorities that the pedestrian was walking south in the area of the railroad tracks and was not in an area designated for pedestrians or crossing, deputies said. The pedestrian was pronounced dead at the scene, according to the sheriff's office. The pedestrian's name was not released pending notification of family. No other injuries were reported. The investigation is ongoing. Further details were not released. Court seems unlikely to back inmate in case. A Supreme Court that has been increasingly protective of religious rights nonetheless seemed wary of allowing a Rastafarian to sue Louisiana prison guards for damages after they forcibly shaved off his knee-length dreadlock. During nearly 2 hours of oral arguments on November 10th, Justice Amy Coney Barrett called what happened to Damon Lander egregious. So, if on the facts, we were looking for a case in which there should be money damages, this is it, she said. But Barrett added that the justices have to think about how their decision could affect other situations, even outside of the religious rights of prisoners, in which public employees could be sued. We can't decide a case just based on these facts, she said. Barrett and other conservative justices questioned whether the 2000 law protecting prisoners' religious rights clearly gives them the right to seek damages from individual workers. Congress could have easily written a statute that does this, said Justice Neil Gorsuch. My concern is it didn't do that. Only the court's three liberal justices seemed persuaded that Lander could sue. Both the Justice Department and Lander's attorney argued he has no other way to hold prison officials responsible now that the knee-length locks he had been growing for nearly a decade are gone. Without damages, officers can literally treat the law like garbage, said Zachary Tripp, Lander's attorney. In 2020, Lander was nearing the end of his five-month sentence for drug possession when he was transferred to a new state facility. He showed prison officials a copy of a court ruling that dreadlocks grown for religious reasons should be accommodated as they were in the previous prisons where he was held. But an intake guard threw the ruling in the trash and called in the warden, according to court filings. When Lander couldn't immediately meet the warden's demand for court documentation of his religious beliefs, he was handcuffed to a chair while his dreadlocks were shaved off. My locks are part of me and part of who I am, Lander said in a statement to USA Today, recalling how he counted on his religion to help him survive incarceration. So when they cut off my hair, they cut off my crown. Lander should have been protected by the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, passed unanimously by the Congress in 2000, to prevent state and local prisons from placing arbitrary or unnecessary restrictions on religious practices. 20 years after enactment, the Justice Department said in a 2020 report, some institutions continue to impose substantial burdens without showing that they are necessary. Since the law was passed, the government has conducted dozens of investigations and either brought or supported lawsuits against jails and prisons. Barrett also asked if the state took any disciplinary action against the officials who shaved off Lander's hair. Agwin Aga said the warden of that facility no longer works for the Corrections Department. A decision is expected by June of 2026. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Canandaigua Daily Messenger on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In sports, making moves. NFL power rankings entering week 11 of the 2025 season. Number one is the Los Angeles Rams, last week also ranked number one. Beware a near-perfect Matthew Stafford on Sunday, Seahawks. He's thrown 20 touchdown passes against zero picks over the past six games, a first in NFL history, as is his current three-game heater with at least four touchdown passes and zero interceptions in each contest. Best team in the league? We could find out in LA this weekend. Number two are the Seattle Seahawks, also ranked number two last week. Beware a fast start Sunday, Rams. The Hawks just became the third team in the Super Bowl era since 1966 to jump out to a 28 lead in consecutive weeks. Best team in the league? We could find out in LA this weekend. Number three are the New England Patriots, number six last week. Coach Mike Vrabel proclaimed them the NFC South champs after they completed a four-game sweep of the division with three touchdowns Sunday at Tampa that covered at least 50 yards. But the Pats, who have won seven straight, should have much bigger prizes in their sights. Number four, the Denver Broncos, who were ranked third last week. Their 46 sacks are the most by a team through 10 games since 1990, and the pass rush can hardly afford to let up given this offense may not total 46 points for the rest of the season if it doesn't escape its current rut. Number five are the Philadelphia Eagles, ranked number four last week. It wasn't pretty, but Monday night's win at Green Bay pushed them back atop the projected NFC playoff field. This offense clearly still isn't hitting on all cylinders. Number six, the Green Bay Packers, number five last week. It wasn't pretty, and Monday night's loss to Philly pushed them nearly out of the projected NFC playoff field. This offense clearly still isn't hitting on all cylinders. Number seven, the Buffalo Bills, ranked seventh last week. A terrible loss to Miami and a foreboding remaining schedule very likely mean this team will have to take the wild card route this year in its ongoing pursuit of the ever-elusive Lombardi Trophy. Number 8, Kansas City Chiefs, ranked 8 last week. Hope you're rested following the bye, fellas. The league's best team over the past 7 seasons, set to face two opponents sharing the league's best record, Denver and Indianapolis, over the next 2 weeks. Number 9, the Detroit Lions, number 9 last week. Points on 8 consecutive possessions Sunday, a season-high 546 yards, their first game in 5 weeks with more than 24 points, running back Jahmyr Gibbs having his best game of the season. Dan Campbell should keep calling the offensive plays as long as he wants. Number 10 of the Indianapolis Colts, number 11 last week. If it seems like it's been forever since a team rode a sensational running back and a strong defense to a Super Bowl, taking whatever a sometimes inconsistent quarterback provided, well, it's actually only been 9 months. Number 11 are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, number 10 last week. The perennial NFC South leaders finish out with a very manageable schedule once they get past road games the next 2 weeks against the Bills and the Rams. Number 12 are the Baltimore Ravens, number 15 last week. Another encouraging sign for a team quickly picking up steam. Running back Derrick Henry is averaging better than 100 yards from scrimmage in the 2 games since quarterback Lamar Jackson entered and returned to the lineup. Henry's seasonal average is 84.3 yards from scrimmage per game. Number 13 are the Houston Texans, number 14 last week. Like the Ravens, they're a 2-time defending divisional champion that's fought its way to a 4-5 record. Maybe the Texans can also make a charge back to the top if they get their quarterback QB1 back soon, too. Number 14, the Jacksonville Jaguars, number 13 last week. Despite Sunday's implosion in Houston, you knew they'd make the AFC playoff field over the Chiefs if the season ended today, which it doesn't, right? Number 15 are the San Francisco 49ers, number 16 last week. Only percentage points out of the NFC's final wild card spot, none of the Niners' next 4 opponents currently has a winning record. Number 16, the Los Angeles Chargers, number 20 last week. For all of their injury issues on offense, the Bolts' defense has been dominant of late, allowing just 591 yards and 40 points total over the past 3 weeks. Offensive linebacker Khalil Mack just joined late Hall of Famer Kevin Green as the only players to ever record at least 35 sacks with 3 different franchises. Number 17, the Pittsburgh Steelers, number 12 last week. Their divisional lead over Baltimore down to a game, the Steelers are now 1-3 in games this season when they don't manage at least 1 takeaway. The Chicago Bears, number 18 last week. Their NFL best plus 14 turnover differential is nearly double the next best teams, the Jags and Bucks at plus 8. But how sustainable is that for a Chicago team that's barely escaping some of the league's worst squads? Number 19, Minnesota Vikings, number 19 last week. It's rather remarkable to commit 8 false start penalties when you're the home team. Number 20, the Carolina Panthers. Number 17 last week. Rookie wide receiver McMillan is the only player in a stunted passing offense with more than 20 catches or 200 yards through the air. Number 21, Cincinnati Bengals, number 22 last week. With his practice window now set to open, quarterback Joe Burrow will apparently be back in action sometime during the next 3 weeks. Number 22, the Arizona Cardinals, 21 last week. At least they don't have to see the Seahawks again this year, the Cards just getting toyed with amid their 9th straight loss to the NFC West's fiercer birds. Number 23 are the Dallas Cowboys, number 23 last week. A team that lives in the spotlight is about to really feel its glare. coming out of their bye, the Cowboys will still be saying goodbye to Marshawn Nealand while trying to welcome defensive lineman Quinnen Williams, all while facing the prospect of playing five consecutive nationally televised games, four in exclusive broadcast windows. There's a lot of scrutiny, even for America's team. Number 24 are the Washington Commanders, number 24 last week. How bad is it right now? If they lose a fifth consecutive game by at least 21 points this Sunday in Madrid, they'd become the first team in the Super Bowl era with such a streak of ineptitude. Number 25, the Cleveland Browns, number 26 last week. Though the league's analytics put their chance of making the playoffs shy of 1%, coach Kevin Stefanski isn't yet ready to put rookie quarterback Shedeur Sanders into the lineup. Number 26, the Miami Dolphins, 27th last week. How this league can pivot. A week ago, it seemed like coach Mike McDaniel could be gone at any minute. Now, he and his team are fresh off trouncing the Bills and suddenly favored to win the NFL's first ever regular season game staged in Spain. Number 27, the Atlanta Falcons, 28 last week. Looking for some glimmer of optimism? Over the last two games, first-round rookie offensive linebackers Jalen Walker and James Pierce Jr. have combined for four sacks. Number 28, New Orleans Saints, number 30 last week. In becoming the franchise's first rookie quarterback to register a win in 44 years, Tyler Shope carved up a legit Carolina defense with a 128.9 passer rating. Coming out of this week's bye, six of the seven teams he's set to face have losing records. Quite an opportunity for Shove to make a case that he should be the guy in 2026 and maybe beyond. Number 29, the New York Jets, 31 last week. Trust the process, right? Number 30, New York Giants, number 25 last week. They've got an interim head coach, probably an interim quarterback if Jackson Dart can't clear concussion protocol and interim skill players elsewhere on offense for the remainder of the season. But trust us, this is a plum job. Number 31, the Las Vegas Raiders, 29 last week. Three targets for tight end Brock Bowers in Thursday night's three-point loss at Denver, the Silver and Black deserve to lose. And number 32, the Tennessee Titans, 32 last week. Aside from the bye week, they won't leave Nashville at all in November. Of course, the league's lowest scoring team has yet to post more than 20 points at Nissan Stadium. Giants can't lose sight of priority for next coach, Jackson Dart. Here's what the New York Giants must consider as the most important factor with team brass set to begin the search for Brian Daboll's replacement as head coach. If the next head coach does not have a legitimate plan for how to get the most out of Jackson Dart, then he cannot be the Giants' next coach. Period. Because with all the talk about who will follow Daboll, the Giants can't afford to ignore the most important piece of this franchise puzzle. It's important to truly appreciate what Dart has done seven starts into his career here, continuing to provide something at quarterback that the Giants had to wait until the 2004 season finale of Eli Manning's rookie campaign to begin to believe in. Dart is a franchise quarterback, and no one in the NFL should put a ceiling on the potential he is showing each and every week since taking over for Russell Wilson in week number four. He is the level of player that, when you get one, everyone knows you have one. The challenge facing an entire organization suddenly becomes about making sure everything answers to his best interest, because this franchise's best interests are now firmly in Dart's hands. The Giants must not waste any opportunities to strike with Dart as the face of the franchise on and off the field. The present is the future, and refusing to lose sight of that is paramount to the success going forward. Dark takes losses hard, and the fact Dable acknowledged that after emotional defeats to Denver and Philadelphia and San Francisco and now Chicago, the greatest takeaway has to be this. Shouldn't we be at the point where he is not the only player feeling that way? The lasting image of this season cannot be Dart's slow walk from the medical tent without his helmet to the Soldier Field locker room, headed inside and into the uncertainty of concussion protocol, the shining light of a lost season suddenly dimmed with significant change promised upon Dable's exit the following morning. When the Patriots hired Mike Vrabel to replace Jared Mayo, he brought with him Josh McDaniels as a key component for Drake May's development. All May has done in his second year is lead the Patriots to the top of the AFC East, emerging as a candidate for NFL MVP. When the Bears hired Ben Johnson in Chicago, he replaced a defensive-minded head coach in Matt Eberflus and was tasked in saving Caleb Williams from coaching incompetence after 1 year. There are many ways to approach this if you are general manager Joe Schoen and the Giants, but none should be without Dart and his growth moving forward at the forefront. The Giants decided that what Dable brought to the table in terms of Dart's development as a quarterback was not enough to save his job. Given the overall record and how this team has continued to fail in the same areas on game day, despite acknowledgement that these things need to be fixed, you can understand that line of reasoning. Dable was 24-1 in 3+ seasons, and this season the Giants have lost 4 road games in which they led by double digits, following a similar script each time. Mike Kafka is the interim head coach, bumping up from assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. His presence will maintain a semblance of continuity with Dart and for Dart, but you can't scream and yell about Dable putting Dart in harm's way for the sake of his own job security, then have no problem turning to coach who is calling the offensive plays as the solution. It's why saying Dable was fired for putting Dart at risk physically is somewhat disingenuous. If that were the case, how is turning to Kafka much different? Regardless, Kafka and the Giants will have the chance to keep Dart's trajectory moving upward. The hope is that he will clear concussion protocol, return to full health, and then the lineup as soon as he gains clearance from independent neurologist. It's not impossible that Dart could be back this week, provided he is no longer having symptoms and can begin advancing through the protocol. The Giants should not settle in their coaching search. With Dart, Malik Nabers, Brian Burns, a returning Cam Scadabo, Abdul Carter, a franchise left tackle, and Andrew Thomas, and potentially yet another top-5 draft pick, this vacancy will be sought after. Do you only hire a coach with an offensive background? No. Don't limit the candidate pool. But it's fair to point out that the Giants have not hired a head coach with a defensive background since Bill Parcells. The Giants have a chance to rewrite this story at season's end and set themselves up for success by making a smart, well-reasoned hire. Interview all the best out there. Do not have any preconceived notions. College coach, coaches with head coaching experience, hotshot coordinators, coaches with connection to the Giants and those who come without them. Nothing should be off the table, well, except for Bill Belichick. But we can get to that in a future column. And the Giants owe it to everyone with the best interest of this franchise in mind to consider it all. The only mandate for the next Giants head coach is the best answer to this question. How will you get the most out of Jackson Dart? Because for the Giants, nothing else matters more. See our experts' pick for Thursday's game. Finally, after a long 14-month wait, the Jets, 2-7, have won consecutive games following a Sunday's impressive 27-20 win over the Cleveland Browns in front of a 72,000-plus fans at MetLife Stadium. and a victory Thursday night would mark the Jets' first three-game winning streak since October 2023. Despite back-to-back two wins over AFC North opponents, the Jets will have their work cut out for them on Thursday night. Not only do the Jets have to play in Foxborough against the red-hot New England Patriots, 8-2, but they'll be doing so without star wide receiver Garrett Wilson, who is expected to miss the next 3 to 4 weeks with a knee sprain. Can the Jets do the improbable and come out on top as an underdog on the road without Wilson, or will the Patriots keep rolling and make it 8 consecutive wins? For Burt Bainbridge, the pick is Patriots 38 and the Jets 10. The Jets are flying high after winning 2 in a row for the first time since September. Unfortunately for the Jets, this is the perfect recipe for a blowout loss. The Patriots are the hottest team in the NFL, winners of 7 straight, and are at home, whereas the Jets will be traveling to Foxborough, likely without their star wide receiver in Wilson and facing the number one rushing defense in the NFL through 10 weeks. The chance gangrene surprises here is near impossible given the context of the situation. In the end, the Patriots roll in the spot to a 3-score victory and continue to increase their lead over the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East. For Art Stapleton, his pick is the Patriots 31, the Jets 10. Reasoning, Drake May is playing at an MVP level in his second year with the Patriots. I'm just not sure the Jets have enough offensively to keep up with New England before Garrett Wilson was lost for a month with a knee injury. Mike Vrabel should be the coach of the year and expect Thursday night to be the breakout for running back Travion Henderson, who is a star in the making. For Dave Rivera, his pick is the Patriots 27, the Jets 13. For his reasoning, just when you wanted to feel good about the Jets, you get the bad news that wide receiver Garrett Wilson is lost for 3 to 4 weeks. The Jets are coming off their second straight victory, but they cannot rely on special team touchdowns to boost them that way every week. The Patriots are on a roll and they're out to prove that they are for real. They'll get their opportunity with a national audience watching Thursday night to show that they're going to be a real contender this season. Chris Eisman's pick is Patriots 34, the Jets 10. Bad matchup for the Jets here. New England's a far better team, and injuries keep mounting for the Jets. Bob Jordan's pick are Patriots 42, the Jets 14. His reasoning, do the Jets have a couple of more special team touchdowns they can pull out of thin air? Short week, road game, rookie head coach, and facing one of the league's 3-8-2 teams. And Brian Marin, his pick is the Patriots 31 and the Jets 10. His reasoning, assuming Justin Fields starts again at quarterback, the Jets are impossible to pick due to the inability to sport any sort of passing attack. Add in a matchup with a red-hot Patriots team with an MVP candidate in Drake May, and this game will likely not be very close. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the Thursday, November 13th issue of the Canandaigua Daily Messenger. Your reader has been Lori. Thank you for listening.